talk.
We're going to get started. Can everybody hear me okay?
Appropriate.
Yep.
Our chairman's going to be here in about 10 minutes. I'll turn over to her when she gets here, but we need to please get this started real quickly. So we're going to start with, first of all, cell phones. Please turn them to mute or off, please. Roll call, please.
Commissioner Madigan is absent. Commissioner Geary.
Here.
Commissioner Anderson. It's going to be late. Commissioner Blackburn.
Here.
Commissioner Taggart.
Here.
And Supervisor Perez. Not here.
Okay. Good. We need to approve the summary of proceedings from... I didn't realize we didn't do October.
What happened was she actually, when she went to this item, she announced the wrong month.
No kidding.
Yeah. In the recording, so we're going to have to do October's,
okay,
and November's.
Well, I don't remember any stipulations on October, but
talked about it. She just announced the wrong month.
Okay, so we need to approve the October 18th summary of proceedings.
Excuse me. I'm just
in my
memory.
That is
motion. I don't remember anything. Karen?
No.
No. Okay. So I need a motion to accept.
I need a motion to approve October minutes.
I'll second that.
Okay. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Okay. November 15th, that was our last meeting, and we do have, I looked it over pretty detailed this afternoon, and are there any errors or questions on the minutes from November?
Not that I have.
Liz.
Mr. Chair, on the summary proceedings that I just picked up on the table back there,
yeah,
it says November 17, 2017.
Thank you.
And
Liz,
on the agenda, it says November 15th.
It should be 15.
That's right. Okay. Sorry, Amber.
So
it's okay.
17th is correct?
No, 15.
15th is correct.
15th is correct. You're right. Okay.
Because that's what she actually announced, and that's what we had to. That's why we have to approve.
She said August.
She did.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't pick up on that one at all.
Okay.
All right. So
I have to listen to it more than once. Trust me.
I'm glad you're paying attention. That's really good because I didn't pick up on that. Okay, so
we just approved October's. We
yeah.
approved
yeah.
August in November.
Do we need to reapprove August?
No.
August is approved.
It's October and November.
Yeah.
Okay.
We need to approve November as corrected.
Okay. So we need a motion to approve November as corrected.
I make a motion to approve November as corrected.
I second that.
Good. Okay. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Thank you. All right, moving right along. Consent agenda. There are none, right? Okay. So we can skip that. Public presentations. I'm going to read the whole thing. This portion of the meeting is reserved for persons to address the commission on any matter that is not on this agenda but under the jurisdiction of the commission. Commissioners may respond briefly to statements made or questions posed. They may ask a question for clarification, make a referral to staff for factual information, or request staff to report back to the commission at a later meeting. Also, the commission may act to direct the staff to place a matter of business on a future agenda. State your name and your address for the record before making a presentation, and you're limited to 2 minutes. So, first row, no. Liz, anybody in the second row?
Actually, no.
Go up right now.
I'm shocked.
Yeah, is it public time?
Yes.
I just got here. I haven't had a chance to give me.
So, anyway, 2 minutes, and then let us know who you are.
That was so fast.
Okay.
And your mic probably should be on, but it's, maybe the camera can help. I don't think it's
hello, hello.
It is not.
No.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
Yes. Michelle Vallejos, Southwest Bakersfield. Do I have to give out my full address?
No.
I'm in 93311.
If you could spell your last name for me, that'd be awesome.
V as in Victor, A-L-L-E-J-O-S. My first request, and I think you guys were kind of talking about it, but sometimes I don't understand, are the November recordings going to be posted?
Yes.
Who said that?
I did.
Okay, perfect. Awesome. I'm just waiting for those. Any news on Silva Street that you can share with us?
Nothing that I can share with the public right now.
Okay. We're waiting. We're excited. And I don't know if you, last time we were here, we talked about all the trash bag dogs that have been found by one woman who is making an effort to expose all of them, and Hosking and Cottonwood is getting really bad. One after another. After another.
Okay, refresh my memory. That's a dog wrapped up in a bag?
These are all dogs dead, wrapped in bags. Hosking and Cottonwood area.
And just dumped along?
Dumped along, and they're there every time she goes. And I'm just sharing it because it needs to be noted. And it's, obviously, unless you catch someone doing it, you can't do anything about it. But I don't know what we can do about making that area restricted to people doing this, or secret surveillance, or not letting the public know that this is happening, because no one needs to go out there and see this.
And that's still, what's the street?
This is Hosking and Cottonwood.
Hosking.
Way up south.
Depending on where it is in the intersection, the majority of Hosking and Cottonwood is city jurisdiction.
Yeah.
But I could still communicate with the city.
That would be awesome.
Control unit and let them know.
It's so hard to know what our boundaries are. Okay, are my 2 minutes up yet?
No, but have you talked to the city of Bakersfield?
No, I had no idea. I thought that was all county stuff. When you hear about streets out there, it seems county, you know. Let me think if I know I had something else. Oh, I have a concern of my own about the whole spay and no kill shelter. What are the stipulations? Because I've been reading a lot about community, and I know my face is bright red. My apologies. Who have no kill, and how when we talk about yes, and how we talk about how bad it would be to have like mandatory spay and neuter, the downfalls that would come with that. Mm-hmm. I want to know what the downfalls of having a no-kill. Like, is there going to be people who are turned away at the door?
So, just to answer your question, I mean, there is no such thing as a stipulation on a no-kill.
Well, I don't know what word would be used to use.
There's no overarching agency that monitors no-kill. It's department specific. So, you know, the industry standard is no-kill is considered you're saving 90% of the animals that come to you. Are there stories about agencies and organizations that go about achieving that number in the wrong way? Yes. Are there stories that they change their intake policies and manipulate numbers to make it look like they're achieving that? Yes, there's numerous. You can do research and find other municipalities that have gotten themselves into trouble doing things like that. But
are you going to turn people away?
No, we're an open admission municipal shelter. We cannot turn strays away.
Not even if you change your no-kill to turn into a
no-kill
policy?
No, because whatever goal that we put forward doesn't change the fact that we are in an open admission municipal animal shelter, which means that we legally, our funding comes from the government to provide rabies prevention. Part of rabies prevention is accepting stray animals. It's a shelter program that we run. We cannot turn stray dogs away. We can turn away stray cats and stray other animals, but dogs we have to continue to take. Now, if you're going to ask me if we will ever get to a point where we have a managed intake system, which means that if you bring me your dog that you no longer want, am I going to make it harder to do that? Yes, in the very near future.
That's right.
Okay. But we will not turn away stray animals.
All right.
And there's also other things that you're trying to do to help people keep their dogs when they are trying
Correct.
To give them up. So there's programs for that as well.
Education.
Okay, I like the education thing. We'll talk about that more another day, maybe next month if you have a meeting.
What was your first name again?
Michelle.
Michelle, thank you, Michelle.
Thank
Those
you.
All good comments.
Okay, thank you.
Next from table two, anybody else before we go to? And Wait, there you do? Yeah. You're on your table too.
I guess I don't want to, but I'm going to.
It's okay.
We're nice. We don't bite.
My name is Darlene Foss, and I'm here to talk about the dogs at Hart Park. I've been out there since day one.
The dogs at Hart Park, you said?
Yes.
Okay.
I started calling animal control on the 9th, and by the 12th, first I was told they would send people out to trap them, and then I was told they don't trap at Hart Park, which is not true because I've been out there with them. And then I was told on the phone that that they don't trap them, and that if I wanted to, I could. And I probably upset the lady when I said, well, I thought that was your job. But then she told me that, I said, there's prey out there. You know, there's large animals out there. I see them go across the golf course all the time, you know. And she said, we totally understand the ecosystem and how the chain works. I don't find a domestic dog to be part of the ecosystem. I don't know, maybe it is, maybe I'm wrong. But, I mean, I was very, that upset me very much. I've been out there every day since then trying to catch those dogs.
Darlene, can you tell me what the situation is?
Well, there was four dogs out there dumped, I'm assuming.
How long have they been out there for, do you know?
Huh?
How long have they been out there for?
Well, it was, December 9th is the first day I took pictures of them. That's the first day that we were aware of them being there. And it was a Saturday, and I went out there and tried to get them, and of course they're running from me. And I did help because I, you know, back in the back of the park where all those tables and there's like a bandstand or something.
Yeah.
Well, I put a gate on that. I took some fencing out there, and I actually caught a couple of them in there. One day, animal control came out. He put the trap in there. He got one. The next day came up, I just happened to be there. I closed it up because I could get the dogs to come up there with food. And I closed it up, got another one. So there was two of them actually taken to animal control. The third little girl, she just came up missing. She was the skittish. I don't think somebody just said, come here, baby, and she went. I think she probably was taken.
But there's still four remaining?
No. So then there was one. And the one we've chased, we've done everything. We've tried trapping. We've tried everything. He is a really smart little Jack Russell, and he doesn't fall for our games. He outsmarts us every time, no matter how quick we are. Anyway, then we were just ready to close the gate on him, thought we had it figured out, and here he comes with three more. So now there's three more dogs. So now there's a total of seven dogs since December 9th.
Okay, so there's seven dogs out there.
Well, no, not anymore.
No, there's four.
There's four now.
No, there's four.
So there's four again.
Minus three plus three.
Okay, so we're chasing
it's
all
a
around.
Problem.
We're trying to feed them. We're trying to do everything. And the next thing you know, about a week now, we saw two of them. I mean, we didn't see two of them. We haven't seen the two. One was just a little one, and the other one was a little terrier. We have not seen those two dogs for a week.
Okay.
I'm assuming since we chased them around and tried everything to get them, somebody else didn't just go, come here, and they didn't come running because they ran from us all the time. And so then there was two. On Saturday, I actually threw a trap out there, got the one little one, and we have her going into a foster rescue plan. And there's still the one original little buddy is what I call him, because I'm always like, get in the car, buddy. Let's go, buddy. Come on, buddy. And he is still there. I went by tonight. He's still there. And you know, they tell me they can't guard him because he's too big. He's too little. And, you know, it will kill him. I understand it's not easy to trap at Hart Park. I totally get that, you know, especially an unwilling dog. But it just seems like they're all being dumped there. I mean, like seven in a month. How many do I know? I know of one other one that I did go out to get and helped get, but that was like a lab mix. But I don't go to Hart Park all the time. If somebody didn't tag me in that, I wouldn't even have went out there, you know. Because I live on the east side. A lot of times they will ask me to go look and see what's going on because they live in the southwest. And it's around the corner from me, you know. It's not that far. But, I mean, I just...
Are the rangers?
You know what? They can't. They don't. I talked to them. It's not their job.
They say to call animal control.
And the one ranger, when we went out there, said animal control doesn't come out here.
And animal control has been out there, because I had an animal control guy call me today from Hart Park asking where this dog is, but I've also had animal control tell me that they don't go out and trap at Hart Park.
But I don't think they would have set it out there, because the dog, odds are, maybe they would have, I don't know, buddy, they're not getting in one, because he won't go in it. We tried it. He just laughs at us, you know, like, really, I'm not.
So, but just to get some clarity, there is a dog.
It's
at the Hart Park area. We've been out trying to capture the public and the department has been out to try to
catch a couple times that I know.
It's a small breed?
Yes. Probably 12 pounds, maybe.
Okay, I'll follow up on
that. But now there's three more.
No, two are missing. I will be looking for those two, and we trapped one. We did get one.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you. Okay, that was table two. Okay.
I just have a couple questions. Okay. Mm-hmm. My name is Stacy Jiske, J-I-S-C-H-K-E. Zip code is 93306. And I was just had a question. I just wanted to again state that I believe these meetings should still stay monthly. I wanted to just give my two cents for whatever that matters as a public person. I also would like to just ask about the ordinance revision that Ms. Gary was working on that was mentioned in the last meeting, and I was just wondering how the public can review these ordinance revisions, as well as how can the public submit revisions to ordinances.
And we'll be covering some of that tonight. So. Okay, thank you very much. Danny Spinks or anyone on table three? Okay.
Some of mine is a little bit more is clarification. I consider myself kind of a vagrant rescue, because I've only been involved probably about maybe two and a half years.
What's your name,
sir? Susan Richardson.
Okay.
And I live in the East Bakersfield, 93306.
Okay.
So mine, I want to know, because a question I had asked actually Danny was, where are these meetings posted? And he said, on your website. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, how is the general public supposed to know about these meetings if they're just on your website? So is there any other place you post these? Is there something you can do to let the community know in case they're interested in coming to also address this issue or any other animal issue that might be going on in Kern County?
We currently post them on our website and downstairs in the outside of the lobby of this building. They're posted as well.
Okay, so is there any place
Facebook should post it? That would be cool.
Is there any other? There's got to be other avenues.
We could do a Facebook post.
I think it's important, because especially when you're talking about trying to educate the community or get them involved, they need to have some direction on where to go. Because I think
you could
non-Q public doesn't necessarily know. You know, a lot of times until you become involved in some of this stuff, you don't know, because you start seeking it out. My other concern is just getting some clarification. If everybody in this room can agree upon that we have a stray problem in this county, part of it's me learning what's going on here and what you're aware of. Because to me, I'm thinking of what's the bottom line here. What's the problem? Okay, we've got rescues pulling dogs left and right and getting them out of Kern County. I mean, since Marley's Mutts started their Mutts Mover program, on the average, they're shipping 60-something dogs out here per month. That's a lot of dogs for one rescue.
It is.
You know. But yet we still have a significant problem. So I think that's one of the things that we need to work in. And I think the spay and neuter is good. But also looking at your stats, I want to clarify, your funding that you currently have is for last year and this year, and your rates that you have here as far as the redemption rates, is that just 2017
up until now? We go by fiscal years, so
okay,
it's July through June, I believe.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
So then that redemption rate isn't an animal redemption rate, it is the it's the voucher redemption rate, so that's the
right. No, I understand that. Okay. I understand that.
What
that means is you might be giving out 100% vouchers, but so far only 85%
Excuse me.
Have
The public presentation is for items that are not on the agenda.
We're going to be covering that.
Blake will be covering that later tonight, so you might want to move on to something else that you wanted to discuss.
On what?
That's not on the agenda.
Redemption rates and so on, that's on the agenda.
Okay, well, it's a learning process for me.
No, that's fine. I'm just letting you know.
And I'm just saying, because I don't know what all has been discussed at this meeting, so I need to learn.
Well, this is
where to go.
You're going to be a good observer tonight, and you'll find out.
Exactly.
And we appreciate you being here. Anybody here from BC tonight?
Yeah. BC?
No. Thank you very much for your comments. Anybody else?
Is that it, Susan?
Did you have any?
Susan. Yeah, pretty much. I'd be happy to talk to you after the meeting.
Yes. I'm clicking. I'm going to put you in.
Okay. Come on up.
Quick.
Okay, you get your 2 minutes.
I say I'll be quick, but then I always talk too long. It's ridiculous.
Okay, well,
I'm Christy Nolan, N-O-L-A-N. Okay. I'm a homeowner in Northeast Bakersfield, and I just have a couple quick comments. Hi, Liz. I would love to keep the monthly meetings monthly as well.
I think we're going to stick to the monthly.
We've already made that determination.
We've talked about it, and we're still going to keep talking about it, probably.
I know. I don't want you to talk about it anymore. Just make it monthly. You said you're going to be making owner surrender more difficult for people.
And it's a little bit more complicated than that, but yes.
Well, what I immediately go to is when you do that, doesn't that just increase the dumping at Hart Park?
No.
No, not necessarily.
Or any other dumping?
There's plenty of studies in other municipalities that are comparable to Kern that have instituted more stringent surrender policies, and they have not seen any increase in field services related calls or animals that were turned in as a whole, as stray, as that you would assume were owned.
Yeah, well, that's a concern I have. Mm-hmm. And then you talked about putting it on Facebook, the meeting on Facebook. What about making an event on Facebook so you can then say, I'm interested, and then it comes up and reminds people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's a lovely thing. And I'm a firm believer that education is key, because until I started coming to these meetings, I had no idea of the immense problem that we have, and due to people like Liz over there and Danny and Stacy, between them and this meeting, I've learned so much. It's an overwhelming problem that we have, but without the rest of the community being educated in that way, then they're going to keep on doing what they're keeping on doing. That's it.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks.
Well, it's my pleasure to welcome our chairman.
Hi, sorry.
She's going to take over the meeting at this point, so.
Battery issues, I apologize. Okay, so that concludes public presentations?
Yes. Exactly.
All right, so then we are going on to staff announcements and reports.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Just a few things I wanted to touch on, and just to clarify for some of the questions that came up. So we would never get to the point at the county animal shelter where we would not take surrendered animals. The problem that we're seeing right now, and if you just want to take a walk through the animal shelter and look at some of the kennel cards that are hanging on the cages, the intake type is on the kennel cards. And it'll give you an idea of how many animals we see surrendered every month. To give you an idea, it's about 125 animals a month that are surrendered.
Why do people surrender animals? Do they tell you why?
I don't think there's enough time for me to answer that question right now, Christy.
Do they tell you why?
Yeah, they do. We ask and they tell us.
That's probably the truth.
Sorry.
But it's a staggering amount of animals that are surrendered to the shelter. And at the moment, we charge $20 to surrender your dog. So, yeah. But it's something
that
we're...
if you say that your dog is a stray, then it doesn't cost you anything.
Yes, but if you give us some reason to believe that it might not
but
be
then when you say, buddy, I'm leaving you here...
Yes,
so
it raises some eyebrows.
To
and
do this, then it's like, bingo.
$20 more than you were when you walked in. But still... the idea is, and I've talked about it in this public forum before, that for an organization that is trying to pride itself on preaching responsible pet ownership, and giving the community the tools to be a responsible pet owner, and then to offer a $20 fee to give me your problem, it's not jiving. What we're saying and what we're doing are two different things. So when we offer that service to the public without asking any real hard-hitting questions about why you're giving me your dog, your family member, and is there any way that we can change your mind or any resources we can give you to help you keep your animal? I mean, it just seems like we're doing a disservice by offering a $20 surrender fee with very little questions asked. So it's something we've been working towards. The only reason it hasn't happened so far is because my personal feeling is that I don't want to take that service away from the public without replacing it with resources to fix the problem. So I don't want to say, I can't take your animal anymore. I'd rather say, I'm not going to take your animal today. However, here's some resources that you can seek out in the interim while your appointment approaches for us to discuss really why you're surrendering your dog. It's a managed intake is what it is. So that's what we're moving towards. But I didn't want it to sound or seem like we're just going to stop taking people's animals altogether. It's not what we're here to do. We're here to offer services to the public.
Would this include people, or would you make it more difficult or complicated, as you said, for people who adopt you guys and then come back and bring them back? Or are they strictly going to be considered owner surrendered still?
Your question is are we going to scrutinize adoption returns?
Yeah. Make it just as difficult on them as you are, like, say, if I came in and walk in and I don't want my dog no more.
The process to surrender your animal and the process to return an adoption will not be the same. I mean, we do have a return policy for adoption. If you return, if it doesn't work out for any reason within 30 days, I mean, we have a lot of people that adopt dogs that have another dog and they just behaviorally don't work out together. It won't be the same.
Okay.
I mean, an adoption return and an owner surrender will be treated as two different things.
Okay.
Moving right along. Just some highlights from... it's been a while since we've gathered. Mm-hmm. But in the month of December, our rescue partners helped place 192 animals in December. Actually, I'll start out by saying that we just wrapped up a whole calendar year. Us in government, we go by fiscal years usually, but just to give you an idea of the calendar year... we reduced overall euthanasia, doesn't sound like much, by about 450 animals.
Cool.
So whereas the year before, from 2015 to 2016, we reduced euthanasia by about 1,500. From 16 to 17, we reduced that by about 450. It's getting harder and harder to find live outcomes, because if you can, I think I've said this before in this forum as well, when you have, you know, any 10 given animals, you know, there's going to be a percentage of those animals that are just not placeable or difficult to place. They may have very little human interaction or limited human interaction. So the ones that are easy to place are always going to be easy to place. The ones that are hard to place, that are behaviorally unsound, maybe physically unsound, that's what we're encroaching into, is that trying to find homes for those difficult to find homes, animals. So that 450, well, although it sounds like a significant drop-off from the year prior, those are 450 animals less that we put down this year that are probably difficult to find homes for in the first place. So it's that sort of progress that we're probably going to see moving forward. Small incremental gains in euthanasia. But I just wanted to point that out. Our foster program in the month of December, so 53 animals enter the foster care program. That's a little bit, it's about half of what it usually is. Typically, the winter months are a little bit slower for intake, although Kern County doesn't seem to believe in that trend. 53 animals, like I said, entered the foster program. And actually, we actually just received a grant in December through Maddie's Fund to send our foster care coordinator to Texas, which she just got back from, to learn more about Austin Pets Alive. It's an animal sheltering mechanism in Austin, Texas. And they have a very successful barn cat program. And we were granted a... we were given grant funding to send her out to learn more about that program. So she just got back, and she's preparing the report for it. So. Our TNR program is still going strong. 6,833 cats have been altered through the TNR program since its inception, which was in June of 2013. Not too much doing on the vaccination clinics. We haven't had one for a while. Actually, tonight's our first vaccine clinic for quite some time. The month of December saw 444 animals go to their new forever homes. Year to date, 5,448 animals have been adopted. That's about several hundred more than it was the year before. 13 cats were adopted from Petco locations in December. Yes, we still do have animals available for adoption in Petco. Field services, you can see that their call volume had decreased. It usually does in December. 969 calls for service in the county of Kern in the month of December. The numbers usually stay pretty much similar. That East Bakersfield is the busiest area that we have, 261 calls. And then just to reiterate, if you look at the last page of euthanasia comparisons, you'll see that the overall euthanasia has reduced a little over 400 animals in this year over last. And I can answer any questions anybody may have.
In the news in the past few months, there's been cases not around here, but in other states and so on, where animals that had no bite histories were sold out to the public, adopted, the proper terminology here, and then proceeded to maul the residents of home that they've run into. What is the protocols when you have a dog that you take in with a known bite history?
We do not adopt out animals with bite history.
Okay.
We will release them to rescue organizations, but we do not private party adopt them.
Okay. Well, I hope that never happens here.
I don't want to unequivocally say we never do. I know that myself, I can remember a few instances where we knew the circumstances surrounding a bite.
Yeah.
And we made an exception.
Dog had a darn good reason.
Yes. But 99.9% of the time, no. If an animal has a known bite history, its only avenue to get out of the shelter is to go back to its owner through a procedure or a hearing. Or a rescue organization. That's pretty much it.
Okay. I had a question about holiday hours and around the New Year's. So I understand that the shelter was closed on New Year's Day and for a couple times, like around the Christmas season. So next year, is that something that we can anticipate that the shelter will be closed on a holiday such as New Year's Day when we have a lot of runaways from fireworks and things like that, as well as not having the capability of people to be able to call animal control during certain days during the holidays? Is it going to be that kind of scenario again in holiday season for 2018?
So historically, it's always been that we're a county agency, so the county holidays are mirrored.
Okay.
County holidays are always, and they have always been, the employees are given the two county holidays for new 2 days for New Year's, 2 days for Christmas. So we're closed usually. If the holiday, Christmas Eve and Christmas Day were to fall in the middle of the week, we would be closed Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. And then the same thing for New Year's, we would be closed New Year's Eve and New Year's Day. This year was a little bit different. The county was proposing to have us shut down for an additional 3 days. And the department felt that wasn't in the best interest of the animals nor the public. So we went before the board, thanks to some people that may be in the room. And we requested to stay open for those 3 additional days, whereas all the other county departments stay closed. So. But to answer your question, yes, you can absolutely assume that next year it'll be closed for 2 days for New Year's and closed for 2 days for Christmas as well. And then the year after and year after and year after.
But the officers are on emergency duty.
Correct. Yeah. So our field services division is on an availability status 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So what they respond to is emergencies. And the way we define emergencies is an animal that's gravely injured or sick. And we also respond to law enforcement assists if somebody's being taken into custody and there's an animal that's involved. And if there's a vicious animal that's loose. But as far as general response to stray animals or deceased animals, no, those are next business day.
So in the event that somebody calls law enforcement to help with an animal and the sheriff tells them to just release the animal back into the street because animal shelters close and it's not an emergency, is that kind of the typical protocol for law enforcement to follow, to just advise the public to just release the animal back into the street because there's no other animal?
I can't really talk about what law enforcement will say and
that's what they do say.
What they won't say, but I can tell you that if we receive calls after hours from somebody that found a stray dog, and they cannot, under any circumstances, keep that animal, that's usually the first thing we say is, can you keep the animal? If they say no, then the only thing legally you can do is return the animal where you found it. Mm.
How that seems just ridiculous that we're consistently maintaining it. And when I talk about emotional stuff and thinking things are ridiculous, that is not to take away anything that anyone at Kern County Animal Services does. Because we all know it's like amazing, and if it didn't exist, it would be awful. But that is crazy. Like crazy talk to let a dog, when we're all talking about the stray dog problem, we need to get the dogs off the street and spay neuter and not. And to say that is, I can't even imagine that someone would say that. Or someone would say, an animal control officer says we don't go after her part. The consistency isn't there. Sheriffs will tell you, release a dog, unless there's a sheriff who takes a dog. It's not consistent.
And you get into areas where we're talking about funding. You know, our department doesn't have the funding to have officers on duty 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. If we did, we would respond to stray calls after hours.
I believe that. I know that I use it for that, but what else? Where is the maintenance? How can we, and I would never know what to do. How can we do more than maintain things the way they are?
Please believe me that your experience is not isolated.
Yes.
I was an officer for 7 years. I can't tell you the amount of calls I've had at 1 a.m. from somebody that found a stray dog. We don't have an option. And most people want an answer. I found a stray dog, where can I take it? We don't have an answer. So when we tell, usually the first question out of a member of the public's mouth is, what am I supposed to do with this lost animal? I found this animal, I don't want to leave it somewhere, what do I do with it? And to be honest with you, we don't have the answer to that question because we're not open. I don't know what to tell you what to do with that animal. Please keep it until we open the next day. And 9 times out of 10, the person cannot do that for whatever reason.
But there are some police agencies, not sheriffs, but police agencies that do have a facility to put the animal in to hold on to it. It just depends on the agency.
And I've known sheriff's deputies that will respond and take an animal and take it to their home.
Take it home.
Until the next day. It just depends. But it's a difficult answer to come up with. I don't, you know, my officers don't know what to tell people when they call after hours because somebody found a stray dog. And really, there's not much that you can do with that animal other than deposit it at a shelter, which if the shelter's not open, you don't have that option. Or keep the animal until the shelter opens. And then when those two options are failing and they're asking you, what do I do with this animal, your only other legal option is to return it where it came from. And it's not, you know, it sounds cold-hearted. It does, to return an animal back to the street where you found it or something like that. But there is some theory behind it that if that animal, especially if it's a dog, if that animal has identification on it, if that animal looks like it's owned, if you return it to where it came from, hopefully its owner's going to come to find it. And when you're left with no options for somebody that's calling you at 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, sometimes that's the best answer that you can give them.
It's just really, it's really hard. Because everyone here, I'm certain, knows that Kern County Animal Services works real hard. Mm-hmm. And if there was anything more that they could do, you guys would. Like, that's a given. But it's, I'm sure, really hard. And I know it's hard on everybody. And I want to know what can be done differently. Because when someone expects animal services or any kind of animal control, that's who they go to. And it's really hard with rescues. I can't take that dog. Oh, I thought you were a rescue. So they turn to the animal shelter. Mm-hmm. And when they get turned away, I wrote down a word that's on your guys' page under David Couch's whatever, or Animal Control Commission, about enhancing public confidence. And that is printed on the website. And all of that stuff does not enhance anything for the public. I don't have answers. I know you don't have answers, but I want to get to a place, and I'm sure all of us actually are caring and starting to really work out something that we can come to that enhancing public confidence. Not the TV stuff, not the stuff we see in ads, not the, you know, all the good stuff that you do that kind of stuff. For the people who don't know, for the people who can call Animal Control at 1 a.m. and get an answer.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't have the answers. I don't have an answer on how a response can be had after hours to pick up a stray dog. I just don't. I think that the sort of obtuse way to look at it is that we know that there's a problem of domesticated animal overpopulation in Kern County. It's not just Kern County, by the way. It's the state of California, probably the nation. But, you know, the slow prodding glacial answer is to stop the breeding in the first place. That's why you see so much money being thrown at spay-neuter. That's why, if you listen to the radio nowadays, just about every Spanish and English radio station in Kern County has ads running for two spay-neuter programs that we have. One that fixes pit bulls for free. Why are we using taxpayer dollars to fix pit bulls for free? Because if you drive around East Bakersfield, you can find one. So it may not be the answer that you're looking for, but right now, other than doubling our budget so that we can have officers on duty 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, the overwhelming problem is too many animals. And the way we fix that is spay-neuter. So, I mean, sometimes we get hyper-focused because we see these animals in the streets and we see the suffering and we see them being dumped on the side of the roads and we want something to be done about it right now. But the painful truth is that the solution to that problem is long-term. And that's what we're trying to work on.
I believe you.
At the same time, trying to fix the smaller issues.
So we really need to be jacking up the Board of Supervisors about their funding source.
Oh, you can go right ahead and speak to the board and see if they can get more money. I don't think it's going to happen. But.
Yeah, when the fire department's trying to keep firefighters.
Yeah. Has anyone ever approached the sheriff's department about having a kennel?
You know, I don't know that anybody's ever approached them about it. I think I don't want to speak about the sheriff's department, but the sheriff's department is a very large unit, and they have a lot of employees.
Right.
And to have something instituted where they're going to suddenly perform the duties of an ACO?
No, actually what I was thinking is something similar to what Bear Valley does, is they have a kennel, and if someone finds a dog and you guys aren't available and they can't keep it, they bring it to the police department, and the police department holds it overnight.
Yeah, and actually we do that in some of our outlying areas. In Mojave, most of the CHP or the sheriff's department that work that area, they have the code to the Mojave Animal Shelter's gate so they can drive in and drop off a dog if they find it. Yes.
Maybe somebody needs to talk to BPD.
But I think we're talking about doing that in Metro Bakersfield. I mean,
how many calls do you get? I have a lost dog and I don't know what to do with it, and it's 2 o'clock, you know, between when you're not closed. You get those daily.
It'd be tough for me to put a number on it.
I mean, is that something that probably happens every day?
We don't receive calls for it every day, but I'm sure it happens more frequently than our calls would indicate. I mean, rarely do our officers, by rarely I say maybe a handful of times a week, rarely do our officers get calls after hours for somebody saying, I found a stray dog and I don't know what to do with it. That's because they contact the sheriff's department after hours, and the sheriff's department tells them if it's a stray dog, they're not going to respond. So those calls don't get to us.
I see.
So it'd be tough to really put a number on it. But it happens. It does. People find dogs all the time. And I'll tell you what, the interesting thing about it is that the more progressive as a community, which if you're new to the community or you're new to animal welfare, this community is way more progressive now as far as animal welfare is concerned than they ever were before. There's more people, and you guys are proof of this, there's more people that care about animals now in Kern County than ever existed before. So the odds of somebody finding a stray animal or seeing a stray animal and actually stopping and making the effort of getting out of the vehicle and trying to capture that animal, the odds of that happening are greater now than they were before. So I'm sure that that volume of times that happens has increased exponentially probably within the past few years. I mean, we're getting a lot of calls nowadays. I'm probably droning on. We're getting a lot of calls nowadays from after-hours veterinarians, more so than ever before. Bakersfield Vet Hospital, Affordable Vet Hospital, and Animal and Emergency and Urgent Care, they're calling us after hours because Good Samaritans are dropping off perfectly healthy stray dogs that they found. It didn't really happen with all that frequency before. So that's just an indication that things are improving, and that there's a lot of problems that we need to overcome, but there's a lot of problems that we have overcome and are continuing to overcome.
If I can add to that, it's been a process, and it's going to continue to be a process, and we have made incredible strides in this community as far as the animal welfare is concerned, as Nick has said, and as far as the county is concerned. I mean, we are now on the path for a no-kill solution in our shelter. And as we become more metro, you know, our population increases, we're obviously going to need more services, overnight being one of them. But with that comes the need for funding. Mm-hmm. And so ultimately, we're all going to need to work together to find the funds that are necessary for the department to work well for us. And that's a process that we're all going to be a part of over, you know, the next 5 to 10 years, quite frankly. And we appreciate your being here and helping us with that, honestly.
I'll throw it out there, too. You know, you hear this phrase, no kill, being thrown out a lot, and, you know, there's concerns over whether that's realistic or what that means. Somebody had asked what that means, what the stipulations are. We this isn't something that we haven't had great consternation into before we started talking about it. But it's the term that we throw out there and the means by which we go about trying to achieve that are very basic. And what I mean by that is we want people to start thinking about animals, about animal welfare. Is my job on the line if I don't achieve no kill? No, I hope not. No. But to talk about a sheltering system in Kern County where no adoptable animal is put down, that's something noble that people can get behind. And I think it creates some attention where there wasn't attention before. So I think that this is one of those things where the path is probably more important than the actual goal. It's hard to believe, but part of that discussion that we had is not just the sheltering system, it's the dogs that are on the streets. It's the more spay neuter that happens in Kern County, the more that the county can support spay neuter, and the more that we can project it out there, the people are aware that there are services that exist, the more dogs are fixed, the less dogs are on the street. If that's in 5 years from now, that's in 5 years from now, but the work we do now will pay off in the future. So I don't want you to think that we're trying to preach this no-kill thing, that's some harebrained scheme to make the shelter work better. It kind of is, but we know that the less animals in the shelter means we have more space for stray animals, and it's also less animals on the street that are having puppies.
And we need to get back to the agenda and the director's report.
Can I just ask one question? I have a hand up.
Does it have to do with the...
Is it possible that you guys can maybe look at other cities that are successful in doing that? Like Burbank, California?
We do.
Yeah, and I'm sorry. We're going to have to move on and stick to the agenda.
Yeah. Anything else?
I just wanted to make a quick comment about the idea of making it more difficult to surrender a pet, causing more strays. I live in Ridgecrest, and our shelter there, our city shelter, makes it very difficult to surrender an animal, and we don't have a big stray problem there, honestly. So I don't think it'll be an increase on that.
I didn't get a chance to crunch the numbers this month because none of us got, I think, the enclosure on all the data, but I was pleased to hear that there's 450 less animals euthanized over.
That's in that euthanasia report there at the end. You can see the numbers are in that euthanasia.
Yeah.
Outcome.
Normally I do it before the meeting, though, and I put some time into it, but I'm just saying from the get-go, I'm glad to see that, and the 450 animals are the ones that are the happiest about that. So, anyway, good going on that. And I was hoping that Lisa Richardson would give us a little debrief on her visit to Austin, because that's like the city for, you know, success in America. I think they're like at 95 or 96% save rate, I think is what their numbers are.
They also have a mandated spay neuter law.
It is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow. Interesting.
Then you sent your... your foster coordinator you sent also to Austin?
Yes.
I'd like to get it.
They went together.
Oh, they went together, okay. I wouldn't mind maybe next month they could report back in and maybe give us a little briefing as to what they learned.
I could arrange that.
Okay, that'd be
one. Put that on the agenda for next month.
Other than that, I have no more questions. Thank you.
I'm going to turn this over to Jeff, who's going to give us an update on volunteers.
Does it matter? Good
evening.
Good evening.
I'm just going to briefly touch on December's report, because I mainly wanted to give you the 2017 final report. Overall, for December, 2,267 hours, and total value of $53,000 was saved by having volunteers on at the shelter property. Yes. A couple things I wanted to just touch on that also is Our volunteer med staff has grown. We have 11 members of the volunteer program that are attending classes and are helping out our vets and the RVTs. And as with 2016, I offered the volunteers to help the Gleaner program collect food, and I offered them an hour of service for every five cans they brought in, and we collected 175 cans this year, which more than doubled our previous total from 2016. In fact, one volunteer bought in 60 cans alone. So, and she's been around with us for a while, so it's not like she's just trying to collect dollars for the heck of it. She actually wanted to help out the needy in our community, which is great. So, for 2017, the calendar year, our core volunteer program continues to grow overall. The number of volunteers is about average, right around what we've had over the last couple of years at the end. We had 149 volunteers go through orientation throughout 2017. 65 of them completed and continued through 2017 at some point, which is about a 46% retention rate. What is kind of neat is as I go through the roster, I start looking at some of the people who've been there, and we still are carrying 10 volunteers that started in 2014.
Wow.
So they are still with us. We have 8 from 2015 and 20 from 2016, and the rest are based on 2017 numbers. Overall, we had 15,600 hours donated by the volunteers this year, the core. 15,648, and that's core volunteers only,
okay.
Green shirts. Total value is $369,000 in savings. The other programs, that's work release, welfare to work, MAOF, one-day volunteers, and court order community service, equal out to be about 14,420 hours, another savings of about $339,000, which basically comes out to 30,068 hours, which is actually a loss comparable overall for the year. Mm-hmm. Which is 26% down from the year before, and I attribute it primarily to the other programs, not to the core volunteers. The work release program, which has been a very, I guess in a way you could say successful for us, but was really kind of down this year, which I don't know if it means that crime's going away or they're just choosing jail over us. We had very, you know, comparable, I think we had over 180 people in 2016. We had only 125 this year. And so that number alone was almost in half when it came to hours served overall. But still, with 30,000 hours, we were able to save approximately $709,000 to the shelter and to the county, which is still a 5% increase overall in savings. So the program's growing. I like it. It's I'm still waiting and hoping that one of these days I'll get over that magical 200 volunteer number. But we'll get there one of these days. I know we will. So a couple of highlights I wanted to talk about real briefly, and Director Cullen and I would be talking about this tomorrow. There's a couple of things that I'm looking forward to. In 2016, we had two Eagle Scout projects completed. And we had a lot of Eagle Scouts come through and take tours and look at different things at the shelter to do. And nothing kind of came to fruition. But in 2018, I expect to have three projects completed. I just got confirmed that we're going to get a hay barn built. Approximately what we've been talking about is about a 12 by 12 by 8, which will protect our hay that a lot of times we have to throw away because it does get mildewed, gets wet during the winter, just kind of gets, you know, damp and musty during the summer, and so this way I'll be able to take care of a little bit longer when we have all those horses on occasion. And it looks like we're going to be able to replace the sheds that hold all of the linen. We're either going to get two really large ones or three medium-sized ones to accommodate all the linen. Our Creature Comforts crew is sewing like crazy, taking all of those comforters and cutting them down. And they two of the sheds are just packed to the gills, literally, with blankets and comforters. And so I've asked Neagle Scott to take that on, and they're looking at building raised sheds so that when we do get some rain, if there is any leakage from the shelter at all, it'll go underneath and not take a chance of getting into the shed where some stuff could be laid. So that's a plus. And then the last one, which I'm hoping that'll get going, and because we've been talking about it for about 2 years, is completing a misting system in the livestock areas. We've had Neil Scott and his father come out and measure several times. They even dug a couple of holes to find some different water lines, and I'm hoping that's going to come through this year also. So we're going to see a great community presence again in 2018, even if we only get two of these done, but I'm hoping all three will get done and we'll get some build out by the community. And it only creates more awareness for our in-house too. So that's about it, unless you got a question.
Well, I just want to commend your group for the volunteer hours and the $709,000 that you're saving in the county. I'm sure you got a thank you card from the county on that one.
Oh, yeah.
Sure now. You have more volunteers than any other department, I know. If you add them all up together, no one can equal what you're doing. So anyway, congratulations on keeping the core going and always being innovative to try new ways of doing it, because that's what it takes. That's one thing I learned from Nathan Winograd, is you always got to be innovative and try new things, because some of it won't work. It's a numbers game. So, anyway, good job on that, and we appreciate all your efforts. Thank you.
Thanks.
And now it's Blake's turn. Talk fast.
Talk fast? No. Everybody wants to talk fast. A fast talking.
Oh, it's 7 o'clock.
Right?
We got an hour in here.
Okay. So, if you got a copy of the spay neuter report funding, it's all different. There's, over the last 2 months, everything's changed. So, we got the Petco funding. Remember, we asked for $5,000 last year, and they gave us $50,000. And so we spent about $10,000, and then we had $40,000 more to go. And we decided we were going to get emergency trailers with that money. And as we started moving down the road of getting emergency trailers, Ms. Anderson decided that she was going to take that project on. And so she's getting us some emergency trailers, so we still had $40,000 we needed to deal with, which is a terrible problem, as you can probably guess. So what I did is we pulled the Save the Pities program out of the $250,000, as well as World Spay Day funding out of the $250,000. So if you look at my report, if you go down towards the bottom under Petco funding, we've got $10,000 for Save the Pities that's being administered by Marley's Mutts, $10,000 being administered by us, and there's some results right there. You'll like the results. So they've done 40 surgeries so far of Save the Pities. And the cost of theirs is $80 a piece because they subsidize them. They use their own funding to subsidize them. It's very appreciated because it keeps our costs down, and they're able to go out and get the donations when they start to run out. We have done 42 surgeries and for a total of $4,370 so far. The interesting thing about that is we are reimbursing our low-income voucher amount, which is $135 or $150 for large, to spay or neuter large animals, large dogs. The reason that our average is for all of the surgeries is about $105. So how do we do that? Critters Without Litters gives us a substantial discount. I noticed that today. So they're helping us out a lot by giving a substantial discount. Instead of billing us for $135 or $150, it's more like $85 or $95, and sometimes it's $80 and sometimes it's $90. And don't ask me why, but I don't care, because it's less than the others. Okay. So that's going really well. You'll notice that the redemption rate on the Save the Pity vouchers is 55%. If you compare that to the redemption rate on our vouchers where we charge $20, it's 85%. To me, that's a statement that if people have skin in the game, they're more likely to redeem their vouchers. I think this is further evidence of that. The other areas we're moving pretty well. The outlying surgeries, Marley's Mutz is doing a lot of that. Is doing some of that, and we're going to be working with Valley Vet to go to places like Taft and Arvin to help us with that. And we're also going to take our coach out with Dr. Wilson to some of these places. So Dr. Wilson, as you know, is raring to go do surgeries, and so she wants to go out to the outlying areas in the coach, and so we can do surgeries out there, and that cost will be covered there. We fully expended our food and ag grant that was $15,000. We did 289 surgeries. So the average cost per surgery of those was $52. Most of that was done by Valley Vet out of Simi Valley, most of those surgeries. And all of those surgeries were done up in the Lake Isabella area. And so we focused on that. And so that's where we are. We're moving along, and we're being quite successful, I think, with getting these surgeries done. Are there any questions or... Yes, Dan.
I have one question. I think you answered it. But as far as the Save the Pitties program and the Marley's Mutz, they're under the same restrictions as KCIS as far as county residents just in outlying areas.
Yes.
It's not their own fund to use to fix pitties. It's specifically for county pits.
It is.
Okay, thanks.
Anything else?
I don't have anything.
I don't get as many questions. I'm fairly non-controversial.
Thank you.
On to commissioner announcements and reports.
I got a little something. I was approached by a large oil company here in town over the holidays. I'm not going to say their name, but they say, here, I hear you're trying to go no-kill. Could you use some money? I said, of course we can use some money. So the reason I'm saying this is because when I told the supervisor, once we go no-kill, you're going to have private donations step up and the public step up like you guys are doing and other people are doing. We're starting to see that, and I'll report back in next month if this is going to happen, but you're going to see corporate sponsors get behind this movement, like I told them that it would. So that's the news that I have to report on that, is that it's the word's getting out, and you're going to get more support as time goes on. We just got to keep doing what we're doing, but do it better, and you're going to see more and more people finally jump on the bandwagon. So that's my comment.
Cool.
Blake touched on it briefly, but we are working towards obtaining 2, possibly 3 disaster prep trailers for Kern County. We will have more. We'll do a presentation probably in the next month or two for everybody. But ultimately, it's a community-based program. The AKC offers a grant, and they pay for half the trailer, and the other half the community secures the funds for it. And we've already got commitment from Kern County Kennel Club and the Bakersfield Obedience Training Club as our sponsors to move forward with this. And so we're now in the process of sending the grants into AKC, and then we will work on some publicity and start the fundraising process here in probably the next month or so, I would suspect. So it'll be really cool when we get them.
When or if?
When.
Okay.
It's a done deal, dude.
And those trailers will probably be placed.
Yes.
They're going to be in the outline.
Like it's areas.
Right.
Yeah, it's going to play into the whole grand plan of having disaster supplies throughout the county to respond to natural disasters that involve animals.
And if you've watched a lot of what's been going on at Ventura Santa Barbara, San Diego has 3 of the trailers. Ventura has a trailer, San Luis has a trailer. So there's quite a few of these trailers in operation around the state, and it will prove to be very beneficial for the community. So we're looking forward to it. Moving on.
Okay. Which groups did you say were?
Bakersfield Obedience Training Club and Kern County Kennel Club. And then I've got to get back with Antelope Valley. I had to go do the presentation. So Antelope Valley Kennel Club is our third club that serves Kern County. They also serve a lot of LA County, and their concern is being able to utilize it for both areas, which we can do because we have what inner.
We have an inner, I think it's called an inner
interagency,
interagency agreement. Yeah.
So it's been in place for years.
Yeah, so it's all good.
Mutually.
So.
Yeah, mutually.
Exactly. So that's our third trailer, and now I've got to go back to their meeting and twist their arms a little more. Okay, so on to old business. We don't have any staff referrals. The emergency prep subcommittee.
We had a training for new volunteers on December 2nd at the Tehachapi Police Department. Liz is smiling. Liz was there.
You were informed this time?
Part classroom, part hands-on, and that's the part that you really got a feel for how an emergency shelter would go. And it was the intake area that I put her in, and she's like, why? And then she got it.
Obvious.
backed up, and we had some good players, some drunks that came up with dogs and all kinds of fun stuff. To, in reality, I mean, that's what stuff happens. Yeah. So the training went great. We plan on doing more.
Commissioner Geary?
Yes.
How many people showed up?
15.
Cool. 15 yeah, new.
New.
Okay.
Yep. The Naomi, the CEO of CCAT, would like to do one once a month. I think that's too much, maybe every 3 months, every quarter.
Yeah.
but we'd like to get more volunteers coming in. So the training was Nick was nice enough to bring the fully stocked disaster response trailer that Kern County has, and whoever put that together was anal on putting it. It was beautiful. There was a map on the door on where everything was. I couldn't wait to open that thing up. The only thing is we couldn't get the locks at the door. I'm going, well, this is a bad thing. But we finally got the locks at. So anyway, great training. So in the meantime, there are some trainings out there, especially in light of what happened with the horses. I'm going to flip into the next thing that they all kind of come together. There's a training in San Ynez called the Horses in Disaster Expo, but it's actually a training. I don't have a lot of details on it. I know I'm going. It's this weekend, and in light of everything that happened with the horses in Bonsall and the horses in the parts of the Ventura fire, I mean, there's got to be a better plan for large animals in the event of a disaster. So as far as the Livestock Containment Committee, I'm just going to move on to that. They're all coming together. Because of the holidays, I haven't done a heck of a lot. I plan on plagiarizing other agencies that do have an ordinance in place. It makes no sense not to do that. And I have two horse officers, two animal control officers who are very well-versed with horses that are going to help me with this. So I hope to have something to you by the next commission meeting. So very draft, but I'll have something. You had a question about the...
Oh, yeah, I was just wondering if there's an opportunity, if there's any way that the public can propose any kind of revisions or updates.
We'll have public hearings.
Yeah, sure. Well, when I bring next month, if you have ideas, you know, go ahead and bring them in, and we can see if they fit into what we're talking about.
How do we know what you're talking about? Is there a way we can find this information?
So basically, there really isn't a whole lot covering stables.
Okay.
So we're just trying to put something on the books. It's probably going to fall under boarding kennels. So it's just going to be a subsection of the
commercial facilities.
Of the commercial facilities. Thank you. So it's basically scratch. It's, you know, I'm trying to put something that is workable, that's reasonable, to kind of oversee how stables are kept. So
excuse
if you
me,
have ideas.
Does this tie in with your question about how do you get a hold of an ordinance ahead of time and get a chance to review?
I'm trying to find that out, yeah. That was my question, was how do we understand what those revisions are and how is it possible, is there an opportunity for the public to also propose or revisions of these ordinances?
That would be at this meeting. The procedure is fairly simple. It just takes a long time. Essentially, the discussion is that before this committee, the committee will usually do a subcommittee that looks into language and writing and what needs to be there. It will be listed on the agenda, which is posted on the website and downstairs, so you can review the agendas to see what weeks it's, if it's going to be discussed that month. Once the discussion finishes here, the commission submits the requested ordinance to the Board of Supervisors. The first meeting at the Board of Supervisors, they call it the reading of the ordinance. Basically, the ordinance written out itself is available from the clerk of the board. They don't actually read it at the session. And you
Isn't
can look
it
at
on the documents, though?
Yeah, it's on the documents.
Yes.
You get those from the clerk of the board or online.
Right.
Yeah. So the first reading will give you the text of the ordinance. If you have any comments, the second reading, which is the following month, you can show up and make comments if you so choose. But the best way to get changes done are to be present for the discussions in front of this board so that they're done before the presentation of the Board of Supervisors.
And currently that's the only ordinance that we have a subcommittee for is the stables. Okay, I just whizzed right through that, so I'm done.
All right, uh-huh. Cool. All right, and then the frequency. Okay, with meetings. We decided we're staying monthly.
Until further notice.
Right, so. Okay, so we can. Remove that from the agenda from here on out.
You can never see the file on
yes,
this.
Chair.
Okay, you guys skip the December.
Yes.
You're right. What terrible things befell animal services with having the commission not meet in December? That's every other month. What has happened? What do we have such a packed agenda this month that it proves that skipping a month is just horrible?
I said sarcasm, Terry.
I point out the fact that there is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people here that embrace the opportunity to come before the ACC and also ask questions of Director Collin. I think it's very valuable, and I'm glad that these people showed up to take advantage of it.
Absolutely.
There's a part of me that agrees with what Commissioner Madigan said at an earlier meeting in that maybe in this capacity it could be less frequent, but if we want the commission to be something else or something more, and we want the community to be more, and we're going to ask more of the community, well, then they need the commission and they need the mouth
input,
microphone, if you will,
right,
to speak directly to me and the department and the commission. So it may have served its purpose in its prior capacity, but I think where we're transitioning and probably
definitely
should stay open to the public monthly. I think there's a reason.
Absolutely.
So I have a question about that, just for clarification purposes. So if we put on there monthly, does that prevent us from going dark in December?
No.
Okay.
We can still.
Because I think we usually we
struggle through.
They take a vote whether to.
Yeah,
as a motion.
Yeah, based on what's going on.
Yeah. Another thing is, a lot of boards like this also will go dark sometimes for like July and August, but that's some derivative thereof. Just this
right.
is just informational.
So ultimately, those are decisions that we can make at the meetings. So. Okay, moving on. New business done. So.
We neglected a motion to receive and file the director's report.
Oh, I'm sorry.
To your report, the
backing
report.
Up. Backing up.
Thank you, Jerry.
Okay. So
thank you, Amber.
Thank you, Amber.
And a second. I'll second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Director's report is filed.
Now you can go to adjournment.
All right, so now we're on to adjournment till next month, February 21st, Wednesday. Same bat time, same bat channel. We're all good to go. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
Most of these people are too young.
I'll make a motion.
Do I have a second?
No, second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, see you next month, guys. Thank you.